It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the fall of 2011, a paid FBI informant from Brooklyn, Saeed Sharif Torres, came to Pittsburgh to help the Bureau investigate the activities of a Wilkinsburg man named Khalifa Ali al-Akili. Mr. Torres, a 63-year-old Muslim now living in South Carolina, had flipped from radical to informant in a 1990s plea arrangement. He allowed New York City filmmakers Lyric Cabral and David Felix Sutcliffe to document his efforts without the knowledge of the FBI to inform the federal government of the activities of al-Akili, who had a criminal history, including drug, gun, and assault charges. The result is a documentary called Terror, with Error in parentheses. Here's a clip from early in the film where the informant, Saeed, who has done work for the FBI in the past, explains why he is accepting this latest assignment.
What happened with the FBI?
They called me to do an assignment in Pittsburgh. Whatever the case may be, if they want me to do surveillance, I'm going to do it, you know? I need the money. I need the money. Whatever this case comes out, if it's worth $200,000, I'm gonna give it all to my son. I kind of messed up last time. I mismanaged all my money, at least over $200,000-$300,000. So if this is my second chance, I'm gonna take advantage of it.
I'm joined now by phone from New York by the producers of Terror, with Error in parentheses, documentary filmmakers Lyric Cabral and David Felix Sutcliffe. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul.
Lyric, you have known Saeed Sharif Torres since 2002. How did you become acquainted with him?
Saeed was my neighbor. We lived together in a small brownstone in Harlem. I lived on the third floor. He lived on the ground level floor. And just through living in the same small building, we became acquainted and began to have conversations. He told me about his time as being a member of the former Black Panther. He was a former member of the Black Panther Party in Harlem. And that was the majority of our conversation, sort of about the cultural history that he had seen growing up. And I, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that he was an informant at that time. That disclosure came later.
Yeah, when did he let you in on that?
To tell the story shortly, one day I came home from school after having conversed with him for about 3 years in this apartment. The apartment was empty. There was no furniture. There was almost no indication that anyone had lived there. And when he called me and I asked, what happened? Where are you? And he said, I can't tell you. Come down to South Carolina. And when I went to visit him in South Carolina, he confessed that that apartment was a safe house. The FBI had been paying the rent, and it was wired with audio and video surveillance to catch Tariq Shah, whose case is also profiled in the film.
Right. And so Sharif has a track record with this, and he's pretty proud, in spite of his involvement with the Black Panthers, in spite of having been a radical for much of his life and to this day, a devout Muslim, he has this record as an informant, which right up until this last case is a pretty sterling one and one that he's proud of. Talk about, David, maybe you can kind of get into this. There's one point in the film where he's showing clippings of people who have been arrested in the past as a result of his work, and he's calling it these are like my trophies.
Yeah. Yeah, Saeed was involved in some pretty high-level cases. Shortly after 9/11, the FBI approached him and asked him to participate in an investigation involving a Yemeni sheikh named Sheikh al-Moyad. Sheikh al-Moyad was accused of having ties to al-Qaeda and having a relationship with bin Laden, and the FBI sent Saeed to Germany to help kind of lure him into this sting where he was offering Sheikh al-Moyad hundreds of thousands of dollars, ostensibly for a future terrorist attack, but ultimately, through the course of that trial, it became ambiguous what the money was going to be used for, and there was another informant in the case who was the translator. And during the trial, they discovered that a lot of the translations were kind of manipulated to help it seem as if the FBI was getting more than it actually was. So on the surface, it looked like an incredible case. Here's a person who potentially has connections to Osama bin Laden. Ultimately, it was revealed that the Sheikh Mujahid had criticized Osama bin Laden, and the relationship had severed several years before 9/11. You know, during the 1980s and 1990s, or during the 80s, Sheikh Mujahid was funneling money to Osama bin Laden to help resist Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, as was the United States government, not directly to Osama bin Laden, but to Afghani freedom fighters. So there are these cases that, you know, agreeably, they look impressive, but once you dig beneath the surface, there's a lot of issues there, and ultimately Sheikh Mujahid was released on an appeal. They were able to overturn his conviction, and he's now free, living in Yemen.
But the man that ostensibly you're following in your film, Saeed Sharif Torres, was proud of the fact that he had brought this man to justice, or at least what the federal government's idea of justice is in this case. And also with regard to Tariq, this was a man that he had befriended, a man that people feel was unjustly accused and imprisoned. And Mr. Torres is not the least bit apologetic about any of this, but as we'll see later in the film, he starts to have misgivings about the case in Pittsburgh. Before we get to that, I'm curious as to why he went along with this. Lyric, maybe you could shed some light as to why he would agree to allow you to follow him, to film him, to be basically embedded with him in his safe house that he ends up in Pittsburgh.
Well, I can say that sort of that the genesis of that answer goes back to his initial disclosure to me in 2005. Because this man, you know, I met his cover. I met the man that went to work every day for the Legal Aid Society, carrying a briefcase, dressed dapperly. So, you know, he had his initial reasons for disclosing back in 2005 were simply that he wanted to get his story on the record as far as including it within the historical perspective. He was seeing shows back then on 2005. You know, there was Sleeper Cell on Showtime. The main character's name was Saeed. And so he was just seeing these things. And I think back then he just really, in this similar desire now, to really just inform the American public about this element of counterterrorism strategy that is really cloaked in secrecy.
Did either of you have any particular misgivings about going along with this? I mean, what would have happened if the FBI had found out that you were filming Saeed as this operation was taking place, recording his conversations and the texts of his conversations with his FBI handlers, unbeknownst to the FBI?
Well, we got legal counsel because this is sort of a new frontier of journalism. This is the first time that a film has sort of been placed filmmakers on the ground as a counterterrorism sting operation is unfolding. And because we knew that we were sort of exploring new ground on screen, we sought counsel from the ACLU and from the Center for Constitutional Rights, who advised us as to sort of the boundaries that we as journalists could take. And we were committed to reporting as many perspectives of this case as we were allowed to access without tampering with the investigation per legal counsel.
And, you know, you're with Saeed and he is talking to you at all hours of the day and night. And there are times when he quite honestly doesn't seem to want you there. He snaps at you, particularly you, Lyric. He snaps at you. He's indignant about some of the questions you're asking. He thinks that you're acting stupid, that you know the answers to the questions you're asking, and he snaps at you, and he's quite profane in this film as well.
I think that a lot of people remark upon how incredible the access of this film is. And, you know, as Lyric mentioned, that's because of her relationship, the incredibly strong relationship that she developed without knowing, you know, his double life. But the kind of flip side of that access is that there is a familiarity there and it's a closeness in which she feels comfortable enough snapping at her and being incredibly, you know, rude to her. And in a way that I noticed that he reserved more for her, you know, that there's a familiarity there in which she feels comfortable kind of being crankier towards her, almost like in this cantankerous uncle fashion. Whereas with me, it was more, you know, there was a more of a professional relationship and a professional kind of response to the questions that I was directing towards him. So I think there's a lot of confusion within audiences whether or not, you know, did he want this film to be made? He absolutely wanted this film to be made. He's very excited to have his story told, But at the same time, he's an unhappy person. And this was, you know, it was a difficult time in his life where he was not getting the kind of compensation he wanted from the FBI, and the case was not developing the way that he had hoped it would.
Lyric, was it in the end about the compensation that made him unhappy, or was there, you know, this is a very intimate portrait of this man as he goes about this operation. Was there a certain kind of conflict that was boiling inside of this man?
Well, I think going back to your question about, you know, what he appears to feel no remorse, I think he's been doing this work for 23 years, and there are certain patterns of behavior and certain aspects of his personality that have been destroyed in service of the government. So I think a lot of sort of the hesitance and sort of the bad personality traits that you see are his internal struggle dealing with 23 years of doing this work. The consequence, you know, he's seen the film. And when he sort of saw the full circle of impact, the way the people in his spiritual community now view him and are wary of him coming into the mosque, the way the mother of someone who, you know, the mother of Tariq Shah looks at him and sort of what she expects that his life is now is accurate, that he's depressed. You know, things are not going well for him. And I think this film actually allowed him to see that in a way that he hadn't been able to fully recognize. And that's why he does not feel remorse, just because he cannot mentally allow himself sort of recognize the full impact of at a human level of the work that he has done.
And Lyric, what was it like for you just to endure, you know, as he's working through all of these different emotions and in a sense taking it out on you and David? I mean, what was it like for you to endure all of that?
Well, I mean, it wasn't something to endure per se. I hope that the film, because the thing about informants and the thing about, you know, Khalifa and Tariq, there has to be something engaging about an informant. You know, the government places these people in communities that they don't know. You know, so it really is the strength of their interactions with people that enables them to do this work. So there are engaging things and charismatic things about Saeed. You know, there are positive traits to this man. If there were not, then he would not be able to get so close to these people and ultimately, be, you know, get them to engage in quote-unquote criminal activity.
We're talking by phone from New York with filmmakers Lyric Cabral and David Felix Sutcliffe, who are the producers of a documentary called Terror with Error in Parentheses, a film that follows an FBI informant to Pittsburgh to as he's looking in on the activities of a man the government suspects of being a terrorist, a Wilkinsburg man. Who we will talk more about here in a moment. And this is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Lyric and David, at a certain point in this film, you are, and I'm hoping I'm not giving too much away here, but you are filming interviews with both the informant and his target, unbeknownst to each of them, as well as the FBI. How worried were you about just the potential danger of what you were doing, if not the legal ramifications?
Well, as Lyric mentioned, we consulted with the ACLU at the very beginning of this project so we could know what the do's and don'ts were and what would place us in personal and legal jeopardy and what was territory that was safer for us to travel in. So going in, we knew that we had that foundation to work from, but that didn't mitigate the fears that we felt, knowing that we were in communication with a target of an FBI investigation whose communications are being monitored by the FBI, and thus revealing our own identities and our own involvement with this project. And we didn't know how that would impact the larger story as well as our, you know, the work on the film in general. But surprisingly, the FBI never contacted us and never seemed to become aware of our involvement with the project until, you know, not until we reached out to them for comment and asked them, you know, to comment upon the film. But to this point, they have not returned that response for comment. They haven't commented on the film.
Yes, and for its part, as you say, the FBI has not commented on the film, but William Crowley, an FBI spokesman in Pittsburgh, told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "We'll stand by the conviction," and that's referring to the conviction of Khalifa Ali al-Akili, the Wilkinsburg man, who eventually is arrested in 2012 on a gun charge following this investigation. So as the film unfolds, the informant Saeed is trying to goad Khalifa Ali al-Akili into conversations about Islamic radicalism. And describe the kind of cat and mouse game that's going on here that you document.
Well, sensibly, the thing about Khalifa is his forward-facing self in terms of he had a public Facebook profile on which he articulated, you know, exercising his First Amendment rights, but he would articulate things that might lead the average person to believe that he supported terrorism. He had photos on there in which he was dressed in traditional Islamic garb, holding a sword that said Soldier of Islam. So I think that was sort of the etiquette that the FBI was going on at the surface level when they sent Saeed to investigate Khalifa. But I think what is particular to note is that Saeed is a counterterrorism informant. He has never worked in drug cases. He has, for the past 23 years, always worked as the Bureau's counterterrorism informant. And so when he came to Pittsburgh, he was specifically tasked with getting Khalifa to engage in domestic terrorist or terrorism activities abroad. And so his Khalifa on his Facebook also had a picture of himself holding a gun at a shooting range. And so a lot of the conversation also that Saeed was trying to engage Khalifa in addition to terrorist activity, would be conversations about weaponry, if he was able to get a gun, if he knew resources to get a gun. So in the event that the counterterrorism charges were to, you know, that he would not, in the event that Khalifa were not to be receptive to the goading about terrorism, they always were aiming to fall back on this gun charge. And that the gun was frequently brought up in conversation as well.
Right.
And I just want to note that this is not an isolated incident. You know, the case, what you see in the film is part of a larger pattern that the FBI is participating in, where, you know, they are sending informants into communities to kind of encourage them to talk about these issues. And it's totally understandable that the FBI would identify Khalifa as a person of interest, given his political stances and his public views on Facebook. However, they're unsatisfied merely letting someone articulate those ideas, and they want to kind of push them to see what they will do, what actions will they participate in, what plots they might be willing to sign up for. Unfortunately, in this case, you know, it became pretty clear that Khalifa wasn't going to step from being an aspirational terrorist into an operational terrorist. And in those types of situations, they often use, as Lyric mentioned, a gun charge as a backup. You know, that's a card in their back pocket that they know that if all else fails, at least we have that we have this charge that we can kind of arrest this target on. But in the film, Khalifa says that his public defender, who has handled thousands of gun cases, she has never once in her entire career seen a single defendant being prosecuted based on a photo of them holding a gun. He went to a gun range unaware that just by touching a gun, it was violating his parole. And when he's spoken to other felons in the institutions where he's been held and been incarcerated, none of the other inmates have ever heard of a similar situation. And many of them have said that they go to gun ranges themselves unaware that that's a violation of their own parole. So it's clear that, you know, the FBI may say that they're standing by the charge of Khalifa's gun charge, but yet this is an unprecedented event, essentially.
And one of the things that's interesting is that the man who is the paid FBI informant, Saeed Torres, he's never apologized for anything that he's done in the past, but he's clearly having some misgivings here about what's going on, and he's trying to tell the FBI that I just don't think that this guy is a danger. I mean, he pretty much spells that out, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's incredible that
he's looking for terrorism, evidence of terrorism. Every time he posed terrorism suggestions to Khalifa was not responsive. And so when he told his handlers this, they had been investigating Khalifa, you know, for over 3 or 4 years at this point before Saeed even came to Pittsburgh. And so I think there was an extreme pressure dictated from Washington that this investigation must keep going. You must keep, you know, continue with conversations, continue to try to get him to participate in terrorist activity.
Go ahead, David.
And also just to add on top of that, you know, in our conversations with Saeed, you know, it was clear that his direct handlers, the people that he was in closer communication with, were sympathetic to his complaints, and they seemed to agree with Saeed to a certain extent that this case did not represent a serious threat. But there was always kind of this discussion about, you know, the boss or the supervisors or people from Washington, that there was this pressure coming down on them to produce results in these cases, which I think is a huge issue. And we don't want to kind of cast this all-encompassing shadow over the FBI saying that they are these, you know, that they are these villains out to arrest, you know, innocent people. But I think there's a disconnect between the agents that are on the ground and the supervising agents who don't have as much direct contact with the informants. And there, you know, it creates a huge issue, as you can see in the film.
Is this harassment, if not outright entrapment, in your opinion?
Well, the legal definition of entrapment, unfortunately, is incredibly narrow. You know, a lot of times people look at this case and say, of course, like if someone's going to be spending months or even years trying to encourage someone to participate in a terrorist activity, why would that not be entrapment? Unfortunately, in the U.S. legal system, if the government can prove that a target or a defendant is predisposed to commit a crime, then they are able to offer almost any incentive that they can, that they have at their disposal, to encourage that person to participate. And because of Khalifa's stances, his publicly, you know, stated views on the Taliban or on his affection for Osama bin Laden, they present that as predisposition to killing innocent civilians, which is, one, of course, is problematic, and two, is not entirely accurate. I mean, it's hard to kind of, it's impossible to predict what someone in the future will do based on statements they make on Facebook.
I think right off, people are going to have a very visceral reaction to your film, people in Pittsburgh, because they'll recognize many of the places where the drama unfolds. What can you say about your time doing this film in the city of Pittsburgh and in the Wilkinsburg area?
Well, I can say that, you know, it's been documented sort of FBI surveillance of mosques, specifically in Pittsburgh. There's a film called The New Muslim Cool, documenting a Puerto Rican rapper named Hamza. And in fact, Hamza and Khalifa were friends. So I think, you know, the Muslim community in Pittsburgh has a history of dealing with FBI surveillance. So I think the film, like you said, will particularly resonate within these communities. But working in Pittsburgh, I think, you know, we're struck by the diversity of the communities in Wilkinsburg. It's a very diverse area. Khalifa was one of few white people that we saw living in Wilkinsburg. And so he himself had a very particular relationship to the area. So I could just say that reporting in Pittsburgh, I think the Muslim community, like you said, will find particular resonance within the film. And it will sort of illustrate the FBI surveillance trends that did start back in 2003 when The New Muslim Cool was made.
Ultimately, what is the statement you're trying to make with this film?
Well, to be totally honest, we want to open up a conversation about these issues. This is something that no audiences have had access to before, be able to witness what occurs during an active counterterrorism investigation. I think Lyric and I both have been working and reporting on this issue for many years, and we have a large body of work that we draw in as context, and to understand these issues. But for people who are coming to this without that same context, we merely want to present them with the reality that we saw, to kind of represent our own experiences following and shadowing Saeed as he was receiving instructions from his handlers, and as he was developing a relationship with the target, with Khalifa. I think people will walk away and have walked away under, you know, recognizing that there is an issue here, but there's no simple solution that we can simply package at the end of the film and say, you know, go out and, you know, sign this campaign or vote for this representative. It's more complex than that, and it's something that we as a public need to be aware of, because in a lot of these cases, you know, although you mentioned before, this looks like entrapment, it seems like entrapment, but there has been no defendants that have been able to win an entrapment case. And I think a large part of that is because juries are made up of American citizens who have only been receiving, you know, media that is basically filtered through the FBI's press releases. When arrest is announced in these cases, many times media will simply repeat what information they are given by the FBI. A lot of times the defendants' families are too afraid to talk to the press at these times. So the only information that is being received and is being filtered out to the public is coming from the FBI themselves.
And Lyric, same question. What is the statement that you are hoping that people take away from this film?
Well, because, you know, I did develop this sort of relationship with Saeed, in which I was betrayed similarly how most of the targets in these investigations are betrayed. And, you know, it's fortunate that I myself was not entrapped. So, like David said, I think we, with this film, because of the tremendous access, really just want to contribute to the public record, you know, and to illumine the world of an FBI informant, and to show his relationships with his handlers, to show the conversations that he has in trying to get close to a target and trying to go to a normal person who is, you know, has no desire to engage in any act of terrorism. How does that happen? What are the slow things over time? What are the words that are used? What is the pattern of behavior? So I think all of these things will really prove instrumental to the public record, because we, you know, fortunately, because of Edward Snowden's revelations about the NSA surveillance program, people have a surveillance is in the public consciousness. However, I think this film will particularly inform folks about how their tax dollars are being spent and actually what these informants are. There are 15,000 of them currently throughout the United States, so I think this film will really illumine what they are actually doing and how American tax dollars are being spent.
And we're down to just a few seconds, but when will the film be released?
Sometime in 2016, it should be available on PBS. We haven't yet confirmed a date or a channel, but people can check out our Facebook page, Terror Documentary, and stay tuned there for updates.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, it's been an interesting conversation, and I want to thank the producers of the film, the documentary Terror with Error in parentheses, for joining us.
Actually, quick yes. Correction. The T is in parentheses and the error is left on its own.
Right.
And we're also the directors and producers.
Directors and producers joining us from New York City, Lyra Cabral and David Felix Sutcliffe. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
Coming up, we will look at Governor Wolf's pledge to acting on his pledge for a severance tax on gas drillers. What are the specifics of the tax? That's next here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.